Jerry, don't you think every perfectionist needs a friend like Kathy?
Oh my goodness, I just feel like I spend so much time just sitting back and watching, going, how does she do that?
Hey, this is Sherry Gregory, and you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules. Today, my delightful co-host, Amy Carroll, and I are talking with Kathy Lipp about making failure your friend. You may not be a woman in ministry, but we know that you'll be able to apply Kathy's humor, how-tos, and hope to your work, your mothering, your marriage, or your everyday life.
I'm just going to briefly introduce my friend Kathy, who is a wife, a mom, a speaker, and author, easily the most supportive and encouraging person I know. And if I were to use one word to describe Kathy, it would be generous. So Kathy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's quite an introduction. And after all my rants on Facebook, I don't know that other people would consider me supportive and generous, but thank you that you think that means the world to me.
Well, you have had a lot to show for your ministry, and I probably have my numbers off, but you have about 16 books, a popular podcast that just celebrated its 100th episode. Yeah. You've got some e-courses, the Finally Clutter-Free Conference. You lead a team of contractors and interns. And I'm sure that a lot of people look at you and go, oh my goodness, she is just so lucky. All of this came so easily for her. So I want to start out by asking you, what is your secret? How does everything you attempt just turn out so perfectly the first time? Let us in on this.
Okay, so I'll tell you the assumption most people make. Can I tell you that?
Absolutely.
They assume you knew Roger was going to have to be a part of this conversation at some point. I've got a pretty terrific husband who is an engineer and is kind of amazing. So they assume that anything I've done well is because of Roger, which I would say is true to a certain extent, but it is kind of funny to me. People tell me all the time, well, if I had a Roger, then I could do X, Y, and Z. The secret to my success is I think success looks very different on both sides. What looks successful to other people feels gut-wrenching on this side so much of the time. And it feels like failure so much of the time. So it's kind of funny that to the rest of the world, it seems successful. And I'm the one who's saying, why aren't we doing more? Because we've tried so much that has just completely fallen on its face. And you mentioned making failure your friend. I don't like failure, but I guess I've come to the realization it's a necessary part of what we're doing here. You know, I really do believe this is a ministry and a business. I believe that I have to be wise in what we're doing. And so it's interesting when you look at the courses I'm taking. Half of them are ministry courses and half of them are business courses. I believe that's biblical. You look at the shrewd master who's given his three servants different responsibilities, really, because of the amount of money he's given. And he's not saying, oh, well, you know, you invested in Jesus' name, so it's okay, we lost everything. No, it's not. I want to be wise with my resources. And my resources, mostly in what I'm doing, are people. And so it's important to me that they are working well for our ministry slash business, and two, that they are growing at the same time. Because if this isn't working on both sides, then we need to reevaluate our relationship. And I've had to reevaluate my relationship with a lot of my contractors. And it's not that they're not brilliant people. It's just maybe not a good fit. And the ministry side of me wants to hang on to people for years till they can do what I need them to do. But the business side of me and honoring all of that and being wise in it means sometimes we have to end relationships. And it breaks my heart because it feels like a failure each and every time. But I've also seen that people have gone on to do really kind of incredible things when they've been released from what they're not supposed to be doing.
That's so awesome. And I've been reading the book of Acts. And, you know, anytime as Christians we think that failure isn't part of the package with ministry, we should go back and read Acts.
I think I'll need to go back and read Acts. That's very
awesome.
It's so true that I always wish I grew during good times, but I don't. I grow during the hard times and the questioning. And Sherry knows, you know, probably about a year and a half ago, I was ready to quit everything because I just felt like things were not happening. And I thought, am I doing this for my ego? Am I doing this for finance? I knew I wasn't doing it for finances. That was pretty obvious by our bank statement. But at one point, I was very content to just say, God, I give all this up because I don't feel like I'm being faithful with what you're doing. And, you know, those conversations are hard and you have to get to the point where you admit you're a failure and God can do great things with that.
You've known me for, I think, about 10 years now. So what I'm wondering is, from your perspective, what's the difference between how you see someone like me? I'm more of a classic perfectionist.
Right.
How would you say the difference between how I respond to failure and how you tend to respond to failure?
I do have an example.
Okay.
I think that my approach to trying things is throwing a whole bunch of stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. Mm-hmm. And I think that you have a target on the wall. And if it doesn't hit the bullseye, that's put in the failure category. Do you feel like that describes you and me?
I think so. And just listening to you say, try a bunch of stuff, I'm already starting to feel like hyperventilating a little bit. Because, of course, if I'm trying a lot, how will I know for certain in advance that it's going to go well? And you're less concerned about knowing in advance if things are going to turn out well.
Yeah, because I just can't know. I always want to try what's fun and see if it resonates with my audience. Mm-hmm. Try something that's been helpful to me and see if it resonates with my audience. So I go in not knowing, and which means that I probably waste a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort. For some reason, I'm more okay with that. And you know, as you and I have been working more and more together, one of the things that I found so interesting is you assume that I have thoroughly thought out plans for absolutely everything I'm doing. And I have a great faith in the people I work with. So I don't want to be the person who's like, here, I've come up with an impossible idea, go make it happen. I don't want to be that person because I've worked for people like that and they make me crazy. But I do want to throw a bunch of stuff out there and see what people are excited about, what gathers their interest and what makes them feel like, wow, I could do that. And so I think that that's probably the biggest difference between the two of us.
How do you walk away from failure so easily? And then how do you start new projects so quickly after failure? Sometimes for me, at least, if something doesn't go well, it can be months and even years before I'm willing to go back and revisit it. Whereas I just watch you bounce back so quickly, and I don't want to imply that it's easy, but I'm just curious how you do it.
I was going to say, because you said it's so easy to walk away, and I'm like, I don't know that it is, but I do have to say that I don't want to spend any time on anything that I don't feel like is garnering results. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's such a privilege to get to do what I do. I came to this late in life. I didn't start really writing until I was about 38 years old. I've written all these books. And in fact, I'm really slowing down on the number of books I'm writing because I want to do a better job. I'm going more towards center now and saying, I would rather do less books and be more passionate about them.
Sure.
And I think that's going to be harder if I'm really passionate about a subject and it doesn't connect with people. So I think I've got some pain ahead of me. But I also know that one of the things that helps me is being part of a team, because a team will tell me, you know, Kathy, I don't think that's going to work. And part of me will say, you know, let's just go ahead and try it anyway. But I really do want to listen to people because I don't want to spend time on things that aren't going to work. As I've gotten older, there's been a little bit more room to be surprised by God. I can plan and plan and plan, but God has his own plans. And if I'm looking more to become a part of his plans, then I'm not going to hang on to things quite as tightly as I did in the past. And I'm going to be freer to say, you know what? I had a plan, but God had a different plan. And that's a hard place to be. It's very easy to say as I'm sitting here in my studio, you know, things are going well right now. I believe there's a mourning process to letting go of
sure.
things that were important. But if I'm holding on to too many things, then that means my hands are not free to be open to what God's bringing to me. And I want to be open to that.
Well, Kathy, one of the things you mentioned when you were talking is just about you want to do things that are successful. How do you measure success?
You know, it used to be financial, and it is to a certain extent. You know, if I can't pay my contractors, I'm not being successful. And if I can't help out with the mortgage or, you know, whatever it is that Roger and I are working towards, if I'm choosing not to tithe, you know, that's not success. That's craziness. But I really am measuring success more and more by the people I work with and seeing what's happening with them. You know, the people I'm investing in and the causes I'm investing in. You know, some things have numbers attached to them, but some things I just know in my gut. I may not ever know the impact I'm having right here and right now, but God knows. The Chariots of Fire scene, we've all seen it. We've all heard it. Every pastor has quoted it. But when I run, I feel God's pleasure. Okay, I do not feel God's pleasure when I run. But I do feel God's pleasure when I speak, when I talk about Compassion, which is an organization I'm all sold out on, when I help communicators communicate better, when a woman goes, cleans out her spice rack and gets rid of things that she's never going to use. I feel God's pleasure. And that's how I know I am being successful. Maybe not in the moment is it showing up in my bank account, or maybe it's not showing up on my Facebook followers, but in that moment, I can feel God's pleasure. And I need to surround myself with people who understand that, that not everything is the numbers, not everything is the finances. Sometimes it's just knowing, yeah, I believe that God was pleased by that. I can feel that in my bones.
Well, and what I'm hearing you talk about here is transformed lives. You know, for so many of us who struggle with perfectionism, we don't even get to the results stage because we don't put things out there. We spend so much time planning and buying the system and reorganizing the system. And we make the 10-year plan and the 5-year, but nothing gets out in front of people for us to find out, because of course we wouldn't want it to fail and then we would feel bad about it. And what I'm hearing you say is you're putting enough things out there to see what, you use the word resonates. And when I was really stuck in perfectionism, I couldn't put anything out there to even see if it resonated because it had to be perfect. And what I'm hearing in you is such a, I'm sure it doesn't always feel that way, but such a freedom to just try and then try again and try again. Would you say that you tend to just aim to learn as you go rather than get it all right the first try?
You know, I do my research, but I remember going to a conference. It was about organization. The presenter was talking about a guy who had come up to him with his Philo facts and all this kind of stuff. And he was showing him all the presenter this. And he goes, wow, that's an impressive system. And so then the presenter was talking to some coworkers of this guy. And one of the coworkers says, yeah, he's super organized, but he spends all of his time saddling up. And the presenter said, what do you mean? He goes, he spends all of his time rearranging stuff and organizing and planning, and he never gets out the gate. I remember I used to be like that. Like, I would plan our meals for a month when I was at home with my kids, but I would never get it just right. So I'd never go shopping. It was never perfect. So I would never go shopping. And so that has helped me so much. I don't want to be the person who is spending all my time saddling up. One of the things I think is so important is you need to have a band of safe people, people that you can try stuff on, and they're not going to say, wow, that sucks. What were you thinking? But they can say, I love your heart behind that, Kathy, but I don't think that you're the person who's supposed to be speaking on that. When people can criticize and critique and explore with you with love first, saying, it's not that your idea sucks. It's that I think you have been called to so many other things. I think this would take you off task. That's a way for somebody to give me feedback without killing me in the process. So you need safe people around you who will let you play, who will let you experiment, that you can send stuff out to and get feedback and know that you're not going to be crushed by it when you receive that back. And then also, I think it's really important to stay in your lane to a certain extent. I've figured out my three passions in life are really helping people kind of remove the emotional, spiritual, and physical clutter from their lives so they can do what they need to do, to help communicators get better at what they do, and to get kids through Compassion Sponsored. And if it's not one of those three things, I need to be really convinced why I should be doing it. And maybe there is a reason I should be doing it, but I need to have some solid facts and evidence behind that. And so I'm not trying a bunch of things that are kind of out of my lane. And I used to do that. So like 90% of my stuff failed before. Now I think I'm up to a good, you know, like 60% of my stuff fails. But the 40% that sticks, that's the stuff that I can get excited about.
I love how casually you say, oh, now about 60% of my stuff fails.
Me too. I thought the same thing.
I'm like, where's my paper bag so I can hyperventilate?
Can I just say this, though? 60% of my stuff failing is failing within the first hour and a half of me trying.
Sure.
So, you know, these are little failures. Mm-hmm. And here's one of the things I love about failure is I get to teach other people what to avoid. Hmm. No failure is lost. There's always a value in it because I can share with other people and my team knows we're not doing that again. So we're learning. It's when you fail and you don't learn from it, mm-hmm. that it's the colossal waste.
But that perspective, Kathy, is exactly the way Sherry described you, which is generous. It's an others-focused perspective. And Sherry and I were just talking about how perfectionism makes you so self-focused. And so that is a really valuable key that you just shared with us.
Does this bad rule sound familiar? You should be ashamed of yourself for failing. This is the bad rule that kept me trapped in error terror for so many years, and I'm grateful to Kathy for being a role model of imperfectionism and for being a friend I feel completely safe failing with. In fact, she encourages me to fail. She's always telling me, fail fast and fail often. So instead of you should be ashamed of yourself for failing, the truth I now tell myself is I can be proud of myself for trying. We hope you'll check out the resources on the webpage for today's episode at sherrygregory.com. That's sherrygregory.com. We're giving away a copy of the book that Kathy and I co-authored, The Cure for the Perfect Life, 12 Ways to Stop Trying Harder and Start Living Braver. You'll also find a free download of 31 Bible verses for braver living and a link to sign up for our 5-day Braver Living email devotion series. We hope you enjoyed episode number 8 of Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules. Next week, Amy and I'll sit down and share all the aha moments that we had while learning from Kathy. If you haven't already, be sure to go to Amy's website and check out the online book study she's doing with her book, Breaking Up with Perfect. For today, grow your grit, embrace God's grace, and when you run across a bad rule, go right on ahead and break it.